NATO defense ministers prepare to meet in Brussels, and Russia reacts to asset freezes in Europe. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFRL. Joining me here in the studio to discuss the things we expect to make news in the coming week in Russia is RFRL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Brian.
So NATO defense ministers are due to meet in Brussels on Wednesday and Thursday, and on top of the agenda is getting prepared for a protracted conflict with Russia that could last beyond Putin's rule. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter will visit Germany and Estonia ahead of that meeting. And on the eve of his trip, Carter told reporters that he will encourage the alliance to think outside the box, dispose of the Cold War playbook. Carter also said he would encourage Germany to play a greater role in security in the world. Steve, what do you make of all this?
Well, I mean, what strikes me most about what Ashton Carter said is that, you know, we've got to prepare for the fact that things might not even change after Putin is gone, that Russia could continue to, you know, he says he hopes Russia will change the way it acts, but he can't even guarantee that's going to happen after Putin's gone. I mean, I think the trip, it's a tough thing because he needs to assure countries like Estonia that NATO's out to protect them, but at the same time manage their expectations a little bit because, it seems like NATO doesn't want to give the Baltics what they want, you know, which is, a more permanent kind of troop presence. So, for now they're going with this, the U.S. may go with this plan to station a lot of equipment. But it's a bit chilling to think that, you know, past 2018, past 2024.
Yeah, no, it's the problem's not just Putin. That's one of the first times I think I heard a senior Western official say that. The other thing that jumped out at me is his saying that the NATO needs to break out of the Cold War paradigm, meaning that a long and protracted conflict with Russia doesn't mean two standing armies facing each other across the Narva River. And that plays into like what the Estonians are saying, what they want. The Estonians, like the Poles, the Latvians, Lithuanians, they want American boots on the ground for obvious reasons. Because if the little green men appear and accidentally an American soldier, you know, God forbid, gets killed, there's no way the U.S. could stay out of that conflict if American blood was shed. And the Poles, the Estonians, the Latvians, they know this, and that's why they want these. But what NATO seems to be doing is creating a different kind of architecture. If you go back to the summit in Wales, the creation of the Rapid Reaction Force, and the American heavy weapons they're talking about putting on the ground in Estonia and elsewhere seem to be part of this whole package. They're trying to come up, and this is what I'm going to be looking for this week, is what kind of architecture is coming into place. It's not going to be the two standing armies facing each other across the Narva River. That's not going to happen. But what is going to happen? And that's what I'm going to be keeping my eye on.
Yeah, and I think his call for Germany to sort of play a bigger part is interesting because, I mean, you have Russia at this point is blaming the U.S. for everything and saying the U.S. is putting pressure on Europe. You know, it would be a little bit better, I think, for the United States if there's more, it's seen or it becomes a more collective thing. And one thing I just wanted to mention that struck me about NATO and I see Sergei Ivanov has said that NATO's actions are hindering Russia's reform efforts, and that struck me as an interesting way of looking at it.
That is interesting, given if you believe, as I do, that reform in the current political structure in Russia, regardless of what NATO is doing, is impossible.
Exactly,
true reform threatens entrenched interests that are not going to let it happen. But no, the Germany piece is very interesting, actually. I thought because Germany has sort of been leading diplomatically on the Ukraine
yes.
crisis. And I'm wondering what Ashton Carter has in mind here or what this has in the works. Is Germany going to start playing a bigger security role in the world? What is that going to mean in practice?
That'll be interesting to see.
Now, the other thing we're looking at this week is the Russian reaction to the asset for last week's asset freezes in Europe. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has threatened tit-for-tat retaliations if Europe seizes any Russian assets in connection with the Yugos ruling. France and Belgium, of course, last week froze the assets of some Russian state companies, although accounts for some diplomatic accounts, seem to have been unfrozen, or it's unclear at this point. I don't know if you were able to unpack this anymore.
Right. Belgium is saying that it's unfreezing or will be unfreezing the account, the diplomatic accounts. It's a little unclear whether they're going to go beyond that and unfreeze other ones, non-diplomatic. And we haven't heard anything from France.
From France,
at least
right.
I haven't. I think obviously any kind of climb down, or what could be seen as a climb down from any of the countries, including Belgium, you know, will be celebrated by Russia. But I still think it's such a poignant thing that this whole, you know, this the Khodorkovsky prosecution, you know, the kind of something that's defined Putin's time in power, you know, is at least to some degree is coming back to haunt to haunt Putin's Russia.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, regardless, and there is this lack of clarity if Belgium unfroze just diplomatic accounts or all accounts. But regardless of what happens here, there's going to be more of this coming in the future. I mean, as I said last week in the blog, as soon as Europe and the West in general decides to enforce its own laws, Russia's very vulnerable. I mean, in the past, we used to think of Russia's integration into global markets as this big asset that Moscow had because it was able to infiltrate, use these companies, masquerading as private enterprises when they're really extensions of the Kremlin as beachheads. But now, if the West starts to enforce its own rules against Russian companies, it creates a liability for Moscow. But on the other hand, as Lavrov said, the Russia's going to start to freeze Western assets in Russia. And I have to wonder, I mean, Russia's assets abroad do make it vulnerable. How exposed is the West in Russia? I mean, what do you make of all this?
I think one of my favorite elements of this is the fact that apparently Russia told the Belgian government when it first complained about these freezes, said, you know, about this court decision, told the government to inform the Belgian courts about Russia's concerns and threats to retaliate. So you've got Russia, a country that's, you know, always accusing the West of meddling in Russian
right.
court decisions, saying, look, we know your courts are separate from the government, but please tell them that that we're threatening them. So I think, so obviously this the threat by Lavrov that Russian courts are going to strike back by starting to freeze Western assets. But I mean, that's something that, you know, that also plays both ways, because then Putin was just trying to create some semblance of a positive investment climate at the St. Petersburg Forum. And then you have, OK, your assets are going to be seized.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, I mean, to answer my rhetorical question, I think Russia is much more exposed than the West is on this score. And what this is going to do is it's like this divorce of Russia from the globalists, this slow divorce of Russia from the global economy, which does not bode well for Russia at all. In terms of Europe enforcing its own laws, I mean, the first thing I thought about when these asset seizures happened was the EU starting to really get tough with Gazprom on antitrust legislation. And again, it's just all Europe has to do is enforce its own laws, and it makes Russia extremely, extremely vulnerable.
Right. And this is essentially, that's why this is such an important issue, because this is kind of, you know, this is something that Russia fears more than almost anything else.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at the stories making news in Russia. We'll be doing this every Monday, so be sure to join in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast, and joining me has been RFRL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.